The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Hey, welcome back. Final hour has arrived, and we are heading to Mississippi. Nick Suss joining us from the Clarion Ledger, covers Ole Miss. And Nick, as we say hello to you, there could be any number of topics that we would choose. Normally, we would start talking about football and obviously some news from the scrimmage over the weekend. I know there's news in the State House, as always, but would I be wrong in saying that the hottest conversation the last two or three days and maybe all week long in Mississippi involves college baseball?
The only reason you'd be wrong is because time frame should have been since about February 5th. But yeah, college baseball is the topic.
Well, tell us about the past weekend, and then we'll look ahead to this coming weekend, because in reading you and keeping up with all my friends down there, it was a wild weekend this past weekend, and it may get even wilder next weekend.
Yeah, so the Cliff Notes version is Arkansas was the number two team in the country. Ole Miss was the number three team in the country. Arkansas ended up taking two out of three from Ole Miss in Oxford with absolute amazingly weird game on Sunday where Arkansas had an 11-0 lead. Ole Miss came back to tie it 14-14, and then Arkansas ended up scoring four runs in the last two innings to take the win. But that seems kind of like a footnote to the fact that over a course of 2 days, over a course of three games, there were more than 33,000 fans who attended this one. And next weekend, in a state that, again, is still opened up after the COVID regulations, Ole Miss is going to be playing Mississippi State in another top 10 series, this time in Starkville. With, again, we'll see if Mississippi State wants to try and beat what Ole Miss just achieved and have the biggest college baseball weekend of the year, probably all season, unless Louisiana starts loosening its restrictions a little bit.
Now, Nick, I've been to a game in Oxford, and I'm trying to figure out how you got that many people in the stadium. And I realize there are a lot of people that can watch the games from not outside the stadium, but in the bleacher, but in the outfield.
Yeah. So the weird quirk of Swayze Field is that right field, where the students sit, technically isn't on campus. The rest of the stadium is, but right field is city property. So you can just pack as many people out there as you want and put them on the lawn, and they're supposed to restrict it. There are seats that are supposed to be given, and this year there are chair backs put out there for a certain number of people. But before game two on Saturday of the doubleheader, there were fans and there were students lined up all the way up the hill through the parking lot of the stadium and past it. It was probably a two-inning long wait to get into the stadium if you didn't get there on time. And they just kept letting people in. I think game one on Saturday ended up being the fifth most attended baseball game in Ole Miss history, and game two ended up being fourth, biggest weekend in school history. And regardless win or loss of the series, you kind of have to tip your cap to the Ole Miss fan base for showing out for these.
I mean, if I wanted to go to a game this weekend in Starkville, would I have to go online to try to buy highly priced tickets?
If your name's not Paul Feinbaum, probably. I'm sure you can just, you know, pull a little bit of sway and they'd happily have you. But yeah, there are online tickets. You guys can try and get them. And I know Mississippi State has not reported as high of attendance this year as Ole Miss has. Mississippi State, at its last series, I think was reporting closer to 6,000 or 7,000 people, even though their stadium can fit closer to that 13,000, 14,000. So we will see if they go true 100% this weekend or if they are taking a slightly more measured approach to reopening. But regardless of what's going to happen, you're not going to find many other stadiums in America fitting 7,000 college baseball fans in. So the spectacle of it nonetheless will be quite, quite enjoyable.
I'm glad. What a difference a year makes. Well, Nick, let's talk college football for just a moment. And, you know, what are you gleaning from the Ole Miss spring so far under Lane Kiffin?
Yeah, the two big takeaways so far are, one, you don't have unlimited reserves of offensive players, and whether it's precaution or off-season surgery, almost every major offensive skill player is sitting out or limited right now, with whether it's Jerrion Ealy and Henry Parrish at running back, or Braylon Sanders, Jonathan Mingo, Dontario Drummond at receiver, Casey Kelly at tight end. That's pretty much all of your returning weapons on offense, save for Snoop Connor, the third running back, and none of them practiced on Saturday in the scrimmage. So kind of hard to glean too much from the offense other than Matt Corral is still your quarterback. But flip side, on the defense, they have a lot more pieces this year. And obviously, you have a lot of players who will openly say there's nowhere to go but up. You can't be worse than you were last year. I think they ranked 126th out of 127 in total defense last year. It was a really, really rough group. But this year, they'll have the benefit of a couple of transfer kids who either weren't cleared last year or weren't cleared until the end of last year, who will get to play. You're talking like Georgia safety Otis Reese and former Navy safety Jake Springer, who's looked really, really strong this spring. And then the back of, I think they already have 8 freshman defensive backs who have shown up on campus as early enrollees, and the top 2 junior college defensive tackles from the last class who have shown up as early enrollees. And when you have 10 reinforcements on the defense from your recruiting class sitting in and learning in the spring, that really does help breed a better defense. And that's kind of the narrative that Kiffin has been pushing and that I've been seeing from these first 3 weeks of practice.
Nick, before you go, we're talking to Nick Suss, who covers Ole Miss for the Clarion Ledger. We just got through mentioning baseball, and one of the critical parts of college baseball is hosting regionals and super regionals, and it seems like we've been down this road before with politics and the state legislature in Mississippi. But can you enlighten us on this latest proclamation from the NCAA? I believe it's involving transgender participation and how this could impact the state.
Yeah, it's so new that it's kind of hard to say anything declaratively. I think that the statement from the NCAA came out less than 4 hours ago, but basically what the statement says is that the NCAA will do everything it can to ensure that its postseason events are inclusive and safe for any transgender participants who are in those events. And in the last 2 months, or in the last month maybe, Mississippi, Arkansas, and Tennessee have all passed bills that would either limit or restrict transgender girls and transgender women from participating in girls and women's sports in their states. Now, what the wording of the NCAA statement is either purposefully vague or annoyingly vague, and it does not say whether it is banning postseason events such as the NCAA basketball tournament or baseball and softball regionals from being in states that have those bills, or it's choosing to not host events that could put transgender athletes in jeopardy in the states where the bills are enacted. So it's hard to say right now whether this would affect something like the first rounds of the NCAA basketball tournament, where a women's team can host on campus, or if it would host, or if it would affect rather a baseball team trying to host regionals or super regionals, or if this is much more pertinent to athletes in sports being affected by the laws directly. And that's what we're trying to find out, because it's not like last summer where the NCAA and the SEC very specifically said, if Mississippi does not change its state flag, we will not host postseason events here. It's not that specific. So for Mississippi and for Tennessee and for Arkansas, I think there's more of a wait and see with this NCAA announcement than a direct line for change. But if it does come to a direct line for change, we will see if Mississippi is quick to act like it was last summer, or if it is a little bit more ready to fight.
Yeah, and Nick, I believe, not that I'm, you know, spending a lot of time on Southern politics, but I believe the governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, vetoed the bill. Now, I don't know where that leaves it, but there has been quite a bit of blowback on this, to say the least. Well, we'll leave it there. There's plenty more to talk about in the interim, and we always appreciate you coming on. All the best, and talk soon.
Thank you, Paul. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Nick Suss, fantastic report there. from the state of Mississippi. We will get back to your calls. I know a lot of you are waiting at 855-242-7285 when we return.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back here on a late Monday afternoon. Logan in North Carolina, next.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing today?
We're doing great, Logan. How about you?
I was doing great till Jeff called in. I mean, what is this guy's problem? Be honest with me, Paul. Do you guys really hire this guy to call in to go back to the old school Feinbaum program?
The truth is, Logan, and I feel like I'm qualified to talk about old school Feinbaum. He wouldn't even make the cut in old school Feinbaum. He's too much of a blowhard. You had to bring something other than the same takes every day.
I know, exactly. It's like, what's going on? So I guess the Suez Canal is now affecting his business. It's like, man, that's crazy, Jeff. What a weird.
The thing that blew me away, Logan, was this, that he contradicted himself at least seven times in the conversation.
I know. I didn't even know what the point he was trying to make, other than trying to be loud as usual. He's always really loud, but like, what was his point?
My final comment on that, Logan, because he's really not worth it, is, had Ohio State beaten Alabama like he predicted boldly the day of the game, do you think his takes would be different than they are now?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Possibly. I don't know. You know, guys like that are just, they remind me of Auburn fans. Like, they just, I don't know if they really know much about football. I think they're in for it to get over on somebody, man. That's what I was calling about anyway. I was calling about the SEC rivalry and the best rivalries, Paul. So I hate to change the subject, but I guess you'll be okay with me doing so because Jeff's not.
Yeah, and I want to say something about that, Logan, because the genesis of my conversation was on WJOX this morning. And the question involved Florida and Georgia. And I made it very clear then, and I made it clear now, that I'm not talking historical rivalries. I'm not even talking about important rivalries. I'm talking about conversation right now. And I have seen such distortions of what I've said by headline-grabbing, Twitter-hungry people, including people that sit behind microphones, that I'm quite frankly embarrassed, because anyone who has a clue knew what I was talking about. And I usually don't get upset by how I'm being interpreted. But of all the people in the world, do you think I would probably be close to the last person in America who would claim that there is a rivalry more important historically than the Auburn-Alabama rivalry?
No, Paul, that's the thing. I mean, that whole documentary on ESPN, the Crimson Tide, whatever it was called, you know, with the whole...
Roll Tide, War Eagle.
Yes, thank you. So that was like when I first really got into your show, and I was like, man, this is great, you know? Unfortunately, I'd moved out of Alabama, so I didn't get to hear you, but at that point, I started listening to you. So, I mean, it's just crazy, and I think, but that's the thing about people with nostalgia. They always want to go back to those old days, and right now, let's just be honest, Auburn-Alabama rivalry is not that big of a deal. I mean, how many Auburn callers do you get a day? I swear, I haven't heard.
Well,
of
no,
Auburn
because
callers.
there's no real. I mean, the great days of those rivalry of that rivalry were you know, 80s, the 80s. I mean, that was an 80s
yeah.
rivalry. Now, in the 70s, as everyone who was alive then know, it was dominated by Alabama, and Auburn fans were made to feel inferior. And Paul Bryant, of all people, called Auburn a cow college. And so,
exactly.
But there was those games in 82, 83, 84, and 85 were epic, 86 as well. And that was that formulated what younger people began to appreciate in the 90s and then in the next generation. But, you know, this show would not have ever gotten off the ground without that rivalry. I'm not walking away from that. And it's just, I just find it intellectually lazy and dishonest for people to try to act like I'm just talking about present day. We hear a lot about the Florida-Georgia rivalry. That is it.
I mean, that's where it's at right now, Paul. I mean, you're talking to a kid that grew up in South Alabama, in Auburn country, in the 80s, and there were schoolyard fights every day about Alabama and Auburn. You know, the 80s were crazy. And before that, you know, my parents never had to deal with that. We owned Auburn. So I understand more than anybody. Like
Logan, I had a friend many years ago, a young lady who grew up, she would have been a teenager in the early 70s. So she told me that she would get on the school bus, and this was when Alabama was winning every single year, and the Alabama fans would spit on her and make fun of her and belittle her because her family owned a farm and they were all Auburn people. I mean, that's how bad it was. And you understand
yeah.
it. I mean, you're from a generation
yeah.
removed from that. But when Auburn beat Alabama in 1972, and I'm doing this just for Jeff because he loves the nostalgia. It was literally like, and Pat Dye later referred to this with the 89 game, but it was like people had been let free out of some, you know, 9 years of imprisonment. And that's why Dye called the Iron Bowl in 1989, which was the first time at Jordan-Hare Stadium. He said it was like the Berlin Wall coming down. It was.
I mean, it really was, and I remember that game, and it was heartbreaking. But, you know, that makes me sad to hear that story because, I mean, I grew up in rural Alabama, too, and, I mean, we didn't go that far. But, you know, I mean, Paul, like, the Alabama-Auburn rivalry was just something that you just grew up in. I mean, you know the story. So, I mean, there's nothing else I can say about it other than I know it was the biggest thing for that whole decade. There's no doubt about it. But I think you're right. I mean, it's changed, and I kind of feel bad. And I've said this before. I kind of want Auburn to step up again, to give us some games.
I mean, Logan, can you imagine – I mean, just think about this for a second. I mean, you know, Dye and Curry were, you know, mortal enemies, and Dye and Perkins – you know, I mean, they may have respected each other, but you know, off the field, they were cutthroat. Can you imagine Brian Harsin and Nick Saban getting into a war of words right now?
I can't. That's the tradition of SEC, though. You know, that's what we're missing, Paul. So I don't know what else to say about that. But
well, anyway, well, I appreciate the call. You made some real great points there, as always, Logan. Thank you. Catherine is up next in Florida. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
We're doing great. Thanks.
I wanted to get in last week just to compliment you again, because we thoroughly enjoyed the coverage that you allowed and the publicity for the March Madness. And it just helped to build the momentum for it. And also, I just want to compliment, really, the NCAA, because they did a fantastic job with all the logistics and, you know, getting those people there and then the teams and the coaches and players.
Catherine, I agree. When they first proposed this in the fall, I could not imagine keeping everyone in Indianapolis for 3 weeks, but they did pull it off, and it was quite good.
They had to just be going stir-crazy sometimes, but it really was phenomenal. And I do think that because the powerhouses were not there, I'd said that before with Kentucky and, you know, North Carolina, Duke, and even Michigan State. But, you know, I saw some teams I've never seen and coaches, but, you know, and you really were a big part in helping us to keep the excitement going.
Well, it's a secret that I try to keep from literally everyone that I'm a huge college basketball fan. Everyone, when I say that, laughs at me, but I grew up a college basketball fan before I was a college football fan. So there's nothing, I've heard people say this about every week of the year, whether it's Masters Week or the NCAA tournament. I mean, the NCAA tournament is as unique of anything in the world of sports.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, it really was. I mean, those last couple of games were amazing.
They were.
I don't even know whether I want to mention about the rivalry between Florida and Georgia.
Well, you would have a little expertise in that.
It has changed. I personally like it years ago. It just, to me, was a lot more fun. Now it just seems a little bit more intense than it was, and I guess it's because of the times and all.
Well, Catherine, here's what I think it is. Social media has really changed everything, and I know what you're talking about, but I used to think it was just youth, but then again, you know, youth evolves every couple of years. It can't always be. I read something the other day that the scariest thought in the world is that the people that I went to high school are now running the country. And but that's generational. I mean, my parents made me believe I was the part of the worst generation, and the next generation was worse. And but everyone has a voice now. Everyone can express themselves. And just on a program like this, a Georgia fan or a Florida fan or an Alabama or Auburn fan can call in, and suddenly we all think that is representative of the fan base when it really isn't. But that's what we think.
Well, we've been to the Florida-Georgia game, and years ago they had a train that started down in Miami early in the morning, come all the way up, stopped here in Kissimmee. We had a lot of Gator fans, people that had graduated from there. And then we got to Jacksonville. They'd have school buses that took us over to the stadium, and they had a big barbecue. And, oh, my gosh, anybody that was anybody in politics or whatever was at that barbecue. And I remember meeting George Smathers. He was our senator.
Oh, sure.
Bruce,
I remember him.
Smathers was our Secretary of State. Probably Spencer Holland was there. But, you know, Florida I have to brag. The University of Florida has put out some of our best leaders in our state. I mean, they really made Florida what it was. And, you know, I'll always be grateful, like Bob Graham, who was our governor.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, so, there's the educational part in addition to the sports. Well, Paul, keep on doing what you're doing. You're amazing, and we all love you. Thank you so much.
Catherine, thank you for saying that, and we all appreciate your call. We will head to a break. We are not done yet. We still have another guest and time for more of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back. Final 30 minutes of our program, and Tom is up next in Ohio. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Paul. How you doing? As always, great to hear your voice. It's
thank
been
you.
A while since I called in, but I listen to you every day.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, two things. First thing is Jeff up here in Columbus, Ohio. I'm so glad that, you know, with him living here in Columbus, that I don't run into this dude. This guy's, I think he needs to start his own show, you know, here in Ohio, or for the Big Ten Network, because the Big Ten Network doesn't have any good shows, and that's why he trolls on the SEC Network. But I think maybe he just needs to go ahead and start his own show and just, you know, be the representative, because he is a true representative, I can tell you right now, of Ohio State. There's no question about it, because I live up here, and I see it every day of my life. So I think he just needs to go ahead and start his own show, talk show here, you know, for the Big Ten Network.
Well, Tommy, it would certainly be entertaining. He's very calm to listen to. He's engaging. He's soothing during a crisis. I mean, you would be better rather than give him a show than, walk into a bar in Columbus and just put a couple of microphones down at closing time and get about it. People would make about as much sense, wouldn't they?
Exactly. Yeah, I just it's fun and entertaining, I will say, to listen to him. But like I said, he's a true representative of what I see every day, you know, living up here. My second thing, I wanted to see if there was any way, Paul, I don't know if you can do this, you know, here in the next couple of days, to find out, you know, what the actual attendance is going to be in these spring games on all the SEC teams, you know, that we have in our league. Because it fascinates me that still the Big Ten is not – there's a lot of schools that, as of now, aren't going to allow anybody in to watch their games, their spring games, which it blows my mind.
Well, I know – I think, Tom, I think it depends. Alabama is using half capacity. I'm not sure what – I'm sure the Mississippi schools are going to be okay based on what we're seeing in baseball. So I think it really depends on where you are. But I will ask some more questions, because we are getting to a bunch of spring games this weekend. Thank you for the call. Thank you very, very much. John is up next. Hey, John, good afternoon.
Paul, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Hey, man. Hey, it's nothing funny, but all of us know someone who has had a life-changing event. To where, maybe divorce or losing a job or whatever. But, you know, when we say, well, man, they flipped. They're not coming back. They're different. Well, you know what, Jeff? He used to be one of your best calls. And today he seems so incoherent and so out there and asking the price of lumber. And I thought, man, when Alabama took Ohio State's ass to the woodshed, that must have flipped him, Paul.
Well, John, that is one. If I could give the answer to your question, that is it, because guys like Jeff, their entire existence is built on being better than something else. And you know, if you strip away the Ohio State allegiance, he doesn't have anything. He basically talks about lumber prices all day, which are fascinating if you're a salesperson at Home Depot or Lowe's. But to the rest of us, it really doesn't matter very much to me. I'm sure if I went out to try to buy a house tomorrow, it would. So maybe I shouldn't speak too soon. But once that, I mean, that wasn't a. I remember January 1st, January 2nd, 2015, when Jeff came into the house and babbled for the next 5 years. And that was the engine. Remember, we're back in high school, and you beat your rival, and you're just so full of yourself the next year. I hate to be so crude, but Jeff had his manhood taken away. That game emasculated Jeff, I don't know how else to say this, but he doesn't really have much left.
Undoubtedly not. I mean, it showed in that call. But that was
He came in talking about the Suez Canal, the price of lumber, and then he went to his normal. Let me attack ESPN commentators other than Herb Street because of Herb Street's connection. If Herb Street had gone to Michigan, he wouldn't spit on Kirk Herb Street.
Exactly. That's right. That's true. But hey, let me make one more comment, Paul. If you
sure.
don't mind.
Not at all.
About Auburn, you kind of just brought up a memory. I was raised in a house that was right next to a cotton farmer in Madison County. Good guy, Mr. Smith. Big Auburn fan. We were big Alabama fans. And him and Dad would always do something to each other after each Alabama-Auburn game. Well, I'll never forget after punt by my punt, my window and my mom and dad's window was right next to his pasture. And I'll never forget waking up on that Sunday and that he had a big cotton wagon out there. And it was blue and a big orange paint. He had 17-16. I'll never forget that. That may not mean a lot to your callers, but it was.
I get it. Hey, John, thank you very much. Great to hear from you.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.